Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, you know, I have to say this, that I know that it's Tuesday, but over the weekend, the news that came out about Donald Trump, his hate rally, and referring to immigrants and migrants as animals, and saying that there is going to be a bloodbath if he's not elected. And it's like, folks, how much more information do you fucking need that this man is a fucking, like, dictator, Nazi, you know, authoritarian in the making? He was caught on a hot mic saying, you know, Kim Jong-un's people, like, when he talks, like, they listen, and that's what I want. He's a fucking dictator, a pariah on the world stage. But all you want is absolute fucking power and people kissing your ring and your feet and you being thought of as the most intelligent, the best looking, the thinnest, the most athletic, right? Genius that ever walked the face of this earth. Except guess what? That would be a fucking lie. Because for the rest of us that live on Earth too, that's not where we are. I'm calling it Earth 2 now, folks, because, you know, I know that they'll say Earth 1 is the original Earth. Earth 2, no, because I want to get the fuck. I want them to have Earth 1. Do you know what I'm saying? I want to be somewhere else. Because it is just getting to be so fucking much to take in. And the media is once again failing. I see headlines like, oh, Donald Trump, you know, speaks out of turn or goes off script. No, you fucking idiots. He's not going off script. Being an authoritarian is the script. That's the play. And to not call it out, to not say what it is fucking malpractice. I'm beside myself. I'm beside myself. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. Continuing on the theme of Donald Trump and just, you know, not making any sense is that, you know, basically, he can't come up with the money that Tish James was awarded in the New York fraud case. He needs, in order to be able to appeal the decision of $454 million, in order to appeal that, you have to post the bond for that exact amount of money. Well, if you're keeping track at home, he already posted a bond of 91 point whatever million dollars for the E. Jean Carroll case to appeal that so that she wouldn't get that money. right? But he can't come up with the $454 million, and you sure as fuck can't go to the same people. And so his attorneys are saying, well, you know, they've faced some considerable hurdles. Yeah, those hurdles are a whole bunch of no's. You know why? Because he's not fucking good for it. So how is it that Donald Trump's attorneys at once waltz into a courtroom and say that he is a multi-billionaire, but you can't come up with half a billion? So one of these things ain't right. He's not a multi-billionaire. Because even if it was tied up in other assets, you could essentially put up, right, something else as saying, well, this is the value of X, so I can put that up as a bond. He don't have it. Folks, it is just the place that we are in, right? Like the place that we are in, that we continually find ourselves, for me, is just, I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted most days. You know, it's like the weekends come and go. They feel like they happen within a blink of an eye. And I honestly, I would like to go backwards, right? Like I would like to just take a time machine, which is why, you know, frankly, I'm excited for my next guest coming up. Susie Banakarim, who is the Emmy award-winning journalist behind the podcast In Retrospect, where each week, her alongside New York Times editor Jessica Bennett revisit a pop culture moment from the 80s and 90s that shaped them to try and understand what it taught us about the world and a woman's place in it. And I thought to myself, like, how fun is this, right? Because who doesn't love the 80s and the 90s? And so many moments that, like, when we look back at them, we're like, wow, this was like a moment. How do we think about it now? And through which lens are we actually looking at it with? So Susie and I get into really good conversation about her pod, but also about politics in general and the ways in which we look at things and the responsibility of journalism. So I'm really excited for you to hear that conversation, which is coming up next. Folks, I am very excited to welcome to Woke AF Daily for the very first time Susie Banakarim, who is the host of the podcast In Retrospect, who is an Emmy-winning journalist and filmmaker, and also directed the 2020 documentary Enemies of the People: Trump and the Political Press. So, Susie, first, I would like to talk about your documentary because I think that where we are right now, where my anger is and remains, is in what seems like the mainstream media's inability to handle a character, a figure like Donald Trump. And so talk to us about your 2020 documentary film and what you learned.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Donald Trump is a fairly unique figure in American history, and the press just really has never figured out how to cover him as a political candidate. In the beginning, they treated him like he was an oddity, like a joke. He was fun. He was good for ratings. So they gave him a lot of attention, thinking he wasn't a serious candidate. And once he became a serious candidate, they didn't really do a good job of adjusting. You know what I mean? It's like they don't adapt in that era, in the 2016 election, very quickly to the fact that now he's the front runner and they do have to treat him like a serious candidate and they have to ask serious questions about the policies he's presenting, the way he's presenting them. And so he gets kind of this pass in the 2016 election, right? He gets to do a lot of things that no normal candidate would be able to do, which is like just give endless speeches. He gets tons of free airtime. He says lots of controversial things. But, you know, when I made the film, the sort of premise of it is that I went back right after the election in 2017, and I asked a bunch of people who had either covered him or who had made coverage decisions about them, what did they feel they might have done differently? So I interviewed Jeff Zucker from CNN. I interviewed Maggie Haberman from The Times. I interviewed people from The Washington Post, from all across the media. And, you know, almost instantly, they did say that there were things they would have done differently. But now we're watching this election, and I think there are some things they're doing differently, but not enough. And the one that I find most frustrating, to be honest, is there's this thing that happens in media, especially on cable media, where a lot of Americans still get their primary news, which is that the news media feels like to be balanced, quote unquote balanced, they have to give equal negative airtime to both candidates. And because Trump is such a chaotic candidate, because he does so many crazy things in a row, nothing really sticks to him because no one can figure out what it is he's doing. But then one narrative ends up sticking to his opponents in a way that kind of crushes them. So in the 2016 campaign, that was Hillary's emails. They couldn't really think of a lot of other things to talk about with Hillary. There wasn't news breaking about her every day. She wasn't calling for a Muslim ban one day and then, you know, talking about, you know, the menstrual cycle of a Fox News host the next day, right? She just wasn't doing these sort of really chaotic things. And so whenever they had to talk about her, they really only had this one issue to talk about. How much were the emails going to matter? How much was it going to stick to her? What was the FBI going to do about it? And what we're seeing in this cycle is that same pattern, but with Biden's age. So they don't know what else to talk about with Biden. He's not particularly chaotic. He's not doing crazy things. He's kind of a boring candidate if you're a press person who wants like an exciting story to cover. So they're just hammering him on age, when Trump is frankly showing a lot of the same, you know, issues that Biden is on age, right? I mean, he's also forgetful and mixes things up, but they don't talk about that with him because every day he comes out and gives some sort of press conference and every day there's a new court filing. And I think people can't keep track of it the way we do, right? People aren't as like plugged in. And so all they hear is that Biden is old and that Trump is just being chaotic like he usually is. And that is not a fair comparison of what's happening in the sort of political sphere.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I want to talk about the recent decision that came down from the Supreme Court in a 9-0 decision, which was the Colorado case that kind of started the domino effect of states removing Donald Trump from the ballot, given the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, and the participation in an insurrection. And the Supreme Court comes down and says, no, states' rights, and this is me, ad-libbing, states' rights really only exist if you are a red state governor taking away people's rights, right, and flooding your state with guns. Outside of that, we get to decide what a state can and cannot do.
Yep.
And that is the decision that they made in Colorado that said, no, Donald Trump is going to be eligible and be on the ballot. And Amy Coney Barrett, one of my least favorite justices, had the audacity to talk about in the decision that we need to bring America together, right?
Mm, yes.
and that this decision, you know, we need to be thoughtful about how we bring together America. Is that right, Amy? So here we are. We're following that decision. Donald Trump got wall-to-wall coverage for his speech, uninterrupted. Donald Trump flanked by a bevy of American flags talking a whole bunch of hot trash, right? That presidents deserve absolute immunity. They can't do their job otherwise. I don't know, because I'm pretty sure the 44 that came before him weren't abject criminals, right?
Yes.
And so here we are, and I'm sitting back, and I had to turn my TV off because I don't like to have that kind of negativity inside my home, right? Like, my blood pressure is high enough.
Your TV is going to be off a lot this cycle.
Right, right. Yeah. So when I think about what the press has learned in that moment, I see that they've learned absolutely fucking nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely nothing. So
it's a rough one. That one is a real rough one, right? Because this is a perfect example of how Donald Trump knows how to manipulate the media. He knows that they have to take his reaction. He has found that they no longer take his political rallies. They've sort of got his number on that. They know he's just going to spout a bunch of lies. So unlike 2016, where he could just, every time he did a political rally, he just got endless coverage on cable TV, this time he's not getting that. So what he's figured out, though, is that if he does press conferences related to the court cases, the news media feels like they have to take those because they're newsworthy, in quotes, right? They feel like it's a product of the news rather than a campaign rally. And, you know, that's debatable, because what Trump does with these speeches is not illuminate the trial, you know, decision in any way, or the court decision in any way. He just uses it as a campaign platform and talks about all sorts of things. Like on that day with the Supreme Court ruling, he was talking about migrant crime, which, as we know, you and I both know, there is no spike in migrant crime. In fact, migrant crime percentage-wise is less than the overall population. But he gets to put in these talking points that he knows actually resonate, right? I mean, I think the thing about Trump is that he's, you know, not all there in some ways, right? I mean, I think, you know, he calls his wife by a different name. He confuses Nancy Pelosi and Nikki Haley. He's often referring to the president as Obama. But what he's always been really good at as a candidate is messaging and finding like a thing to say that sort of breaks through the noise. And he just says it over and over again until people on his side, and also people in the middle, right, who frankly are the ones who decide elections, start to believe the thing. And so migrant crime, this idea that there's a migrant crime wave, he's done a pretty good job of making people believe that that's a thing, right? And so when the news media just airs these speeches and doesn't interrupt them, or doesn't, you know, wait until he's given them and just air a couple of sound bites, they are playing into his games again. And I really don't understand it. I mean, I think one of the worst examples of this was when CNN put him live on a town hall. You know,
oh my God.
I mean, it just was crazy. I was like, did you guys literally just not pay attention to the 2016 election? Were you sleeping for that? And, you know, the president of CNN at that time is no longer there. So, I mean, maybe he wasn't up for the job in more ways than one. But I was really shocked by that decision. And, you know, no amount of fact checking changes the visuals that you describe, right? What you were just describing, standing in front of the American flag, like, Poli-Sci 101, that the image you present, I mean, that's a real Reagan, you know, lesson, right? Is it almost doesn't matter what you're saying sometimes, if the visuals are presidential, if they are validating, if they give him a sense of authority, that is huge for him. And I think that is really, you know, something that if you're a political reporter, you're not thinking about, and you're not thinking about actively, you're not doing your job anymore. Like, we know who this candidate is. It's time to really think about that in a clear way.
And so my thing, too, is that I don't say don't air Donald Trump. What I'm saying is exactly what you mentioned, which is, you know that he's going to give a presser, right?
Yeah.
So your job should be to record that presser, go through it with fact checkers.
100%.
And then pare it down into the clips that people are going to take in with analysis. That's responsible journalism.
And only to the things that are relevant to the case. Like, why are they airing things about all these other campaign issues he wants to talk about? He'll make a statement about the Supreme Court case. He did at the top. And then everything else he said was just him enjoying his time in front of the cameras.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. We don't need that. And I don't think it educates anyone or informs anyone. So if you think of your role as a journalist, not just to entertain, which I think, you know, was a bit of a danger in the 2016 coverage, then you know you have a responsibility to do it differently. And I think what's hard for me is that I do, you know, have a lot of friends and colleagues at CNN who I respect, who I think do think about these issues deeply. But I think, you know, either their voices aren't always heard, or also in the chaos of breaking news, lots of decisions get made that aren't thoughtful. And that really concerns me, because as we know from 2016, it has a real impact on the country when the information people are getting is not high quality. And that's just not high quality content.
What blows my mind about the decisions that are made, whether it is breaking news or just segments in general for regular shows, is that Donald Trump has outright gone after media, right? There were pipe bombs that were sent to CNN, right? Like, we forget 100%. These things. He has said that if he's president again, that he is going to bankrupt or shut down MSNBC, right? Free press has no place in a dictatorship. And so you would think that for your own self-preservation, media networks, that you would then cover this person as the real threat to our democracy and to your job, right? Because in dictatorships, in communist countries, in authoritarian regimes, you know what channel they got? They got one.
Yeah.
They got one state-run television, right? Yeah.
Yes, and if it was up to Trump, we would just have Fox, and he would own Fox. I mean, that's the truth, you know? And I think, you know, what's interesting about that is that, you know, I don't think that the press sees this in that clear a way, right? They don't see it as like, oh, this is a threat to us. Because on some level, most people just believe in the norms, right? They believe in the institutions. They may not think they do. They may think they're skeptical. But the reality is, we've lived in America a long time. And so, you know, Americans tend to sort of just believe that things will somehow work out, that Donald Trump won't be able to prevail against these institutions. But, you know, I come from Iran, so I don't have that kind of certainty. You know what I mean? Like, I was born in a country where things do fall apart. And so I know that countries do go through really, like, negative transformations. Like, it is possible for Donald Trump, and as we've seen, even the results of the 2016 election, to have a really negative impact on democracy. But it's really hard, I think, for people to wrap their head around that. Even well-intentioned, good reporters sometimes struggle with that dichotomy, because they are just used to covering things in a very traditional way, and they don't know how to make this adjustment without feeling or being accused in a bad faith accusation of being biased. So it's this crazy thing where the idea of balance and lack of bias, objectivity, as we're sort of taught in journalism schools, is weaponized against journalists. So they don't know how to cover Trump, because they're like, oh, I'm not objective if I call him a liar. I'm not objective if I say that he's having this mental decline. But that's just the reality of what they're seeing. Your job as a journalist is to tell people what you're seeing. You know, that's not bias to call things what they are. And I don't know if you remember, in 2016, it took them months and months and months to even call lies lies. There was so much debate about it. Should call a lie a lie? The New York Times like came out with all this sort of like justification for why they didn't call them lies. And, you know, now at least I guess we should be grateful we have that. They at least say when he's lying. But even that they do pretty sparingly, which is wild because he lies like, I'd say he probably tells more lies than truths in any given speech.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I want to go back to you mentioning your roots in Iran. And so that makes you understand the fact that countries lose their way, right? Like government doesn't remain stable. There is instability that happens. And I want to ask you one, like, I'm not sure when you left Iran, but, you know, what we learned here in America through the protests that had been going on for over, you know, well over a year, was that, you know, prior to the mid-1970s, Iran had been a place that was flourishing, right? Until religious zealots took over and completely destroyed freedoms there. Can you just give us like your thoughts on that and the lack of ability for Americans, I think, to have imagination beyond what it is that they know? Do you know what I'm saying? To imagine that something could end.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I want to be clear that Iran is a complicated country with a lot of geopolitical forces that are obviously very different from America. I don't want to make it sound like I don't know the difference between those two places. I left Iran when I was very young. I left at the revolution. My father, you know, was in a senior position and was put under house arrest. We had to sort of escape from Iran, essentially. And I think, you know, one thing that's worth noting is that Iran, even before this religious regime, wasn't a democracy, right? There was still a king, there was a shah. So, you know, there were lots of issues with that government as well, but certainly far more freedoms. I mean, the Iran my parents described to me as a child, like, women did not have to wear a hijab, which is a covering over their head. You know, women could drive, women could, you know, I mean, women, which I know these sound like basic rights, but those are rights that in a lot of Middle Eastern countries, women do not have, right? In Saudi Arabia, women can't drive, et cetera. And so I think what I learned from sort of hearing my parents' stories about this life that they had that was like really fun, and there were like parties and this very like Western life. And then all of a sudden, they see the sort of stirrings of this revolution, and they don't take it seriously, right? They sort of do the same thing that I'm describing, which is they just sort of assume that this is noise and that the institutions will somehow survive them. Whether or not those institutions were perfect is sort of beside the point. They just believed in the sort of momentum of life, that if you're going a certain way, that things will continue that way. And they were genuinely shocked when the revolution resulted in this religious regime that completely tore the country apart. And listen, I don't know that I think America can become what Iran is. I don't think it can, right? I mean, that's a very specific thing. But, you know, look, people said in the 2016 election that there was no difference. There were people like, let's say, Susan Sarandon, who I know gets more heat than probably she deserves because she's not like, you know, the person who decided the election. But there were people who said Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were the same, that voting for one versus the other wouldn't make a difference, that it was all the same sort of like corporate politics. Well, we see that that's just not true, right? We see it in the reproductive rights issues that have come up since then. We see it in the way the Supreme Court is stacked to sort of push conservative issues. We see it in terms of, you know, the income disparity that grew under the Trump administration. So it does make a difference who you vote for. And I think that is really complicated for Americans because we believe in the democracy, the story of America so much, or not necessarily we, you and me, but people in general tend to really have faith in that. People, especially who those systems have mostly worked for. Mm-hmm. So they tend to not have the imagination for what could come. And I think that's why so many of them were actually surprised when Roe was overturned, when people who'd been paying attention had been saying for years that that was going to be the result.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, I think that what I encourage, at least on this show, is for there to be a level of consciousness and understanding about the possibilities,
yeah,
right? And to stop living in a place of assumptions that things will just hold. The system's held,
totally.
Even though Donald Trump was president the first time. And I'm like, did the systems really hold?
Yeah, did they hold?
Right.
Like, who thinks that? There was an insurrection.
Like, they held so much as a sieve holds liquid, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so the buildings didn't crumble. Like, if that's what we mean. So I do think that it's important to have clarity, but to understand and to imagine the possibilities of, you know, the directions that things can take. Susie, with you know, last question for you. I just want to give you the opportunity to tell folks about your podcast, your iHeart podcast, in retrospect, and what you discuss, what they can expect, and why they should tune in.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that, and I would love for people to listen to it. I co-host the podcast with my friend Jessica Bennett. It is very different from what we've talked about today. It's not politics, it's pop culture, which is another thing that I really love. But it is media criticism. So there is a thread, which is, you know, we look back at stories from the 80s and 90s, that's why it's called In Retrospect, that we loved, you know, pop culture moments, and we re-examine them to sort of ask ourselves, how did the media cover them at the time? What were the ways in which we viewed them at that younger age, and how do we see them differently? So one of my favorite episodes is actually about Robin Givens and the sort of way in which she was really vilified by the press at that time. You know, there's this moment, this very famous moment where her and Mike Tyson give an interview to ABC News, and she admits he's abusing her. And the result of that is not that he is sort of condemned, but that she is condemned, and that she is literally called on the cover of People magazine, the most hated woman in America. So those are the kinds of things we're looking at. Some of them are more fun and some of them are a little more serious. We're doing one coming up on Miss America and Vanessa Williams and how she was the first Miss Black America. And, you know, she was dethroned essentially at the end of her reign. We did one recently on Devil Wears Prada, which is a movie I really love. And, in the 2000s, and about how ambition is part of that story and what it means about our ambition and how we saw it when we were younger and how we think about our ambition now. So it's a way to talk about sort of a broad set of issues through a pop culture lens.
Love it so much. And the next time that you come back, I hope that we dive into one of those many topics, because I love every single one of the episodes that you just laid out. And I often think about films I rewatch movies all the time. And so looking at it through my present lens versus when they came out is always like a really interesting way to see your own personal evolution, but also how society has evolved as well.
Totally. That's very much sort of the premise of the show.
Yeah. Thank you so much for making the time for Woke AF. And I hope that you come back and join us again soon, Susie.
Thank you so much for having me.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF, as always. Power to the people and to all the people power. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.